My name is Brock Allen. I do security consulting for a living. I mainly focus on identity management and access control, things like, logging in, password storage, password, resets, a single sign-on is a big part of that, as well as securing your web APIs. When I talk to my, go to dinner parties and talk to my wife's friends and stuff like that, I say I do cybersecurity because that just sounds so much more sexy. But security is a big field, so that's my little narrow slice of what I do. When I am not doing consulting on those topics, I am working on open source projects to help fill the gaps that are missing from ASP.NET and MVC. And so there are a few open source projects up here that you may or may not have heard of before. Identity server being kind of the big one, identity manager is another one, and then identity model. That one's kind of like the glue. There's some glue that hangs, holds some things together. So anyway, we're going to talk about ASP.NET Core and what is new in it. Something basically to know about this is that the code, of course, is all available up on GitHub. Microsoft is doing this all open source. So under github.com/ASP.NET actually is the organization for all of the stuff from Microsoft. And underneath that is a repo called Home, which the thing about this is it has a wiki, and the wiki has their roadmap. And unfortunately, the roadmap, let's see if it was updated. Nope, not yet. This used to say, release candidate was gonna be in January, and release was gonna be in March of this year, and unfortunately that got all pushed back. I think Scott Hunter announced a day or two ago that they're gonna be targeting release candidate 2, which is kind of what everyone's been waiting for, sometime in the next 4 to 6 weeks, and then release by the end of July, was it? June, July, yeah, July. So anyway, that's actually really good news. I can't wait. In terms of this talk, what's mostly interesting is the repo under here that has to do with security. And so this repo has all of the code for what we are, or what I'm gonna be talking about, and that's basically how I learned this stuff, is I went and read their code. Right? I mean, so you can too. That's quite helpful. There are docs too, I suppose. That probably is probably where I should have started, but the docs are actually not bad either. Those, by the way, are docs.asp.net. So they actually have some pretty good documentation up here, if this can come up, on, well, if you dig around here, somewhere under here is the whole security section. So there's a ton of good stuff that they're doing. They're not done, but of course, they're still working on it. So just a little bit of history in terms of understanding kind of where we are. Of course, Microsoft's kind of had three major versions, if you will, of ASP.NET. There was, of course, the original version of ASP.NET, sometimes now known as classic ASP.NET. I remember we used to call classic ASP versus ASP.NET, but now this is starting to become the classic version. And this is where the programming model was all centered around system.web.dll, and the whole web architecture was based around modules and handlers. And then the web frameworks, of course, were web forms, and MVC up to MVC4. I'm just out of my own curiosity, how many of you guys still live in that world, sort of on your primary day-to-day basis? Okay, actually, that's actually a less than I thought. So, okay, it's good. So the thing with this programming model was it was designed to give you everything and the kitchen sink. So the entire mindset of the web framework was, you start up a web project and you're gonna get all of this stuff. And what's kind of funny is if you ever created an empty web application in MVC, you ended up with, 100 lines of configuration to give you the empty runtime. You had to unconfigure, basically, the stuff that you were getting for free. And then you ended up with dozens and dozens of references to assemblies that were from kind of a prior era of coding. I don't think anybody needs a new project where you create, you need to use data sets or enterprise services. That's the old comm stuff. So anyway, new projects. Probably don't want to work in this environment. And Microsoft's known for a while that they need to, or have been wanting to, rethink their web platform architecture. So this is where Katana came out in 2013. This was very much a rethinking of the web pipeline programming model. And the mindset here was that you got nothing, right? And if you wanted something, you had to add it in. So how many of you guys are using Katana? Again, for my own curiosity. So still not as many as I thought. So the rest of you guys just don't do web development? Is that it? Okay. So maybe you came here to learn how your bank, online banking, you know, logins work. Okay, so Katana, here's a picture showing you what the kind of the mindset with Katana is that you have a host that you're gonna run. This could be your own self-hosting environment. The host could be something like an IIS container, if you will. And the idea is that then you would load in this Owen server, and the Owen server would be empty. And whatever code you wanted to run in the pipeline, in that web server, would be added to a pipeline. And the code, or the components, had a name of middleware. So middleware is just code that gets to look at every request on the way in. And you would build a chain of middleware. And at the end, usually, would be a middleware that's sort of your application framework. Right? That could be like SignalR, or even MVC wasn't implemented that way, but logically something like that. Web API certainly is built that way. And so this is where, at least from a security perspective, that's the stuff we care about, is not so much the application code, but the middleware in front. Because the middleware is what is going to help us out with a lot of our security in our applications. So Katana was an interesting, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but sort of an interesting experiment from Microsoft. They wanted to reimagine building a web server architecture. It was heavily inspired by Node.js, but they're kind of throwing it all away, and that's where ASP.NET Core comes in. So ASP.NET Core is a whole new implementation of a web server architecture, and they started over because they learned a lot, made some mistakes, and decided to start over. But it really looks and feels a lot like Katana. So if you, the insides are all different, but your exposure to it, the way you interact with it, it looks very, very similar to Katana. So one of the other big changes, or the reasons that they started over from scratch, is because of this concept of bring your own CLR. And the idea that they were trying to build on here was the fact that they were going to be putting out these new versions of .NET. So I'm sure you guys have heard of .NET Core, right? .NET Core is this cross-platform version of .NET that you can then just ship with your app in the bin directory. So you can have multiple apps running on the same server with two different versions of .NET. And so they had to re-plumb everything to kind of capitalize on that. And so while they were doing that, they decided, okay, well, we'll go ahead and rebuild our ASP.NET architecture on top, and that's where ASP.NET Core comes in. It will look and feel very much like the way Katana did. So that's why I said Katana was kind of an experiment. It was definitely a good learning process for them. And it looks very, very similar. So the idea is that you have some sort of host. Again, it could be your own self-hosting thing, whatever. When you load up, you're going to pick which version of .NET you want now that there are multiple versions of .NET. And then inside of that, if you want to do an ASP.NET application, you'll load in then the ASP.NET runtime, which, same sort of thing, is a pipeline that you can configure with the middleware you want to run. And again, typically at the end of that pipeline is your application framework. A couple things about this. Now MVC is implemented as middleware, so ASP.NET Core MVC, I think they're calling it one as well, is middleware that you just plug into this pipeline. The prior MVC still had a dependency on like IIS and system.web. So anyway, that's one of the big things about this MVC. Also, MVC is unified now with Web API. There are no two separate Web API framework versus a framework to build web pages. They are the same framework. The other thing about this pipeline is that dependency injection is a first-class citizen, which is kind of a nice feature. So from a security perspective, what we are going to realize here is that security is going to be provided to us via middleware. So we're going to have different types of middleware, depending on what type of security you want. And also some other security services are made available to your application via dependency injection. So if you need data protection or the new authorization system, those are just, you add a constructor argument for those different data types and they magically show up in your constructor. So anyway, that's the high level architecture of ASP.NET Core. So in terms of the things about security, One of the big changes is now claims. Right, actually, how many of you guys do claims? Okay, again, about half of you. So claims has been around for a while, the concept at least. And claims first showed up in the .NET world back with a framework called WIF, Windows Identity Foundation, back in 2009, I believe. And that's actually when I started working on that sort of, you know, fully focusing on security. It was back in the WIF era. And so WIF was a nice library where it changed how we modeled the user, the identity of the user in your application. Instead, what we do, instead of the old iIdentity and iPrinciple that just has a name and a role, we have this notion of claims. And claims is a much more general way to represent our identity of our user. So that's really nice now that WIF finally got rolled into .NET 4.5. But the point here is that now the actual framework has first-class support for it. So everything you do with respect to your user, you're always modeling them in terms of claims. So that's definitely a good thing. Sort of the corollary to that is that the iIdentity and the iPrinciple interfaces that you've probably seen for 15 years in .NET, custom implementations of those are officially no longer supported, if that makes sense. So if you have investments in custom implementations of iPrinciple and iIdentity, you need to think about moving away from those to the claims-based programming model. So that's one big thing. Authentication, which we used to have like forms authentication. That was like an HTTP module that was always wired into your app. You know, that kind of thing, cookie-based authentication, is now just provided in a similar way, but of course the mechanics are different with middleware. So there's a cookie authentication middleware that I'm going to show here, and that's how we're going to do your traditional browser-based authentication, log your user in. There are other middlewares for doing external authentication. So there's sort of the social media, you know, Google and Facebook logins, but there's also the more enterprise-style logins external to your application. So if you're using Azure Active Directory, for example, that's considered to be external because you're not taking credentials right into your own UI. Other security features in ASP.NET Core, Cores is also implemented as a middleware. There's a new authorization system, the whole logging system, and diagnostics. Those are all provided as services in the DI system. So again, you just need to find the NuGet that you want that provides that, add it to your, you know, dependency list, and then start injecting those into your constructor. The other last couple things we're going to talk about at the end is the new data protection API. Do you remember the machine key element in web.config? Gone, okay? They've replaced it, so I'll talk about that. And then the other thing is the authorization system, which is a really, I'm really happy, and I think they did a good job getting us pointed in the right direction for changing how we do authorization. So we'll look at that at the end. So a couple quick things here is that the core of this new ASP.NET core is the HTTP context class. Except it's the new HTTP context class, not the old HTTP context class. So from, you know, ASP.NET programming in the past, we had HTTP context, which gave you information about the current request into your application. So it had, you know, things like the request and the response. But in terms of security, the thing we care about is this thing here, right? The authentication manager. That is the, you know, object or the API that you are going to interact with the most when it comes to talking to the security plumbing. So the authentication manager then has a few different APIs that you are generally going to need to know about. So the methods on this guy are things like sign in and sign out. Those are kind of an obvious sort of method for managing users authenticating. There's some methods called challenge. That has to do with saying, the user's not logged in, go get them logged in, whatever that means. And then there's another one down here at the bottom called authenticate. So we're going to look at these as we go through the demo. Okay, so actually, let's go write some code. So what I have here is a MVC core or ASP.NET core MVC application. I did basically file new project, and I created the empty MVC project. And so what we have here is basically your traditional, you know, home controller with the index method. I have a secure method here that we're going to secure in a minute. We're going to have an account controller, and it's over on the account controller where we're going to do all of our, you know, signing in and signing out and whatnot, which I haven't yet filled in. Just to run this real quick, right now, just to see, there's a home page, secure page, and right now, obviously, it's not secure because I didn't do any sort of authentication to get here. So the other thing about this, actually, let me go back to my home computer. Actually, yeah, let's go ahead and start securing this. So what I want to do is when somebody who's not logged in comes to this method, I want to make sure that they get logged in. And so I mentioned on the HTTP context, there's the Authentication Manager class. And this has methods like challenge. All the methods, by the way, are async. So you have to get used to making all your controller action methods async and await. But basically, challenge says, hey, the user needs to get logged in. So you could always write some code, something like, you know, if user.identity.isAuthenticated is false, right? Go and get them signed in. Oops, sorry. Yeah, wait. Do I have an async at the top? I don't. Well, I'm going to comment this out in a minute. So, but anyway, this is kind of what this would look like, right? You're going to basically say challenge. And what challenge does, it says, go get them logged in. Now, we haven't talked about what we're going to use to log in, so that'll be something I'm going to do here in a minute. Challenge, it might be a common thing to invoke. It kind of looks funny as just like a function call there. So MVC has a little helper to wrap this up, which is a new challenge result. And the challenge result will basically say, hey, they came into this action method, and I need to go get them logged in. The other thing here, which again, as you can imagine, instead of doing this all programmatically, right, what do we have? What's the easy way to do this in MVC? The good old authorize attribute. So that thing still exists. And now what the authorize attribute does is it basically uses this new challenge method for you. Okay? So you could either write, you know, code it yourself directly or let it implicitly do this. I guess the other thing, just to show you while I was here, is the user. If you look at the user, it is a claims principle. So if you've done claims in the past, no more downcasting to claims principle. It's just everything is claims principle. OK, awesome. So let me just re-request this page and see what we get. So if we go to the secure page, well, it didn't show the HTML. OK, that's probably good, right? That's because I wasn't allowed in. And the trick here is that notice the status code is 401. So by default, right, the user's not authenticated. They come into my server. My server says, hey, you got to be authenticated. And I haven't told my app anything else about how to authenticate. That's the default behavior. You get a 401, which is very, I don't know, HTTP-like. Right? So if you're building web APIs and just web APIs, you're not doing any kind of UI, that's the right status code to return when the user is anonymous and they need to be authenticated. OK, so how am I going to actually do this? Well, I'm going to show you the first middleware. Cookie authentication middleware. So this is middleware that is going to allow me to allow the user to log in. They're going to pass me some credentials, and I need to issue a cookie to get them signed in. So to pull this into my application, what I'm going to do is go to this new file here called project.json. I don't know if you guys have seen this one. But project.json is sort of the new packages.config file, right, which was the NuGet references. So anytime you need a NuGet, you really just add it to this thing. This file has a bunch of other things as well, but just for what we're doing right now, think of this as the way to grab NuGet packages. And so the nice thing about this is this actually has some nice IntelliSense. Okay. If you have an internet connection, I suppose, though, right? Cookies. Okay. So that's going to be the same one. So hopefully the network's okay, because it would stink if I can't grab NuGets. So over on the right, I don't know if you references, it's doing restoring. That's kind of like the package restore. It's doing the download of that. And it looks like it did an error, so that's good. So I now have cookies as middleware, as a NuGet package available in my application. So back over to my startup, this is where we do our pipeline configuration. So there's a method called configure where we pull in any middleware that we want to do. And the pattern here is that off of this thing called the iApplication Builder, there are extension methods for doing use this or use that. And these are just different middlewares, if you will. And so these are the defaults coming in from the default MVC template. So what we have here is then a middleware to serve up static files. We have a middleware to then actually run MVC. And the idea is that I want my cookies to protect my MVC. So if a cookie comes in, I'm going to use that to know and authenticate the user. So I need to put this in front of MVC. Order is important. And so I'm going to do use cookie authentication. And in here, what they do is they pass you this options, and the options allow you to configure how the cookie is going to be managed. So it has all the standard properties that you would imagine a cookie. You know, you can set the domain of the cookie. We can set the, if you really want the name of the cookie to be set, you can do that. You can set the timeout of the cookie, you know, time span, you know, 30 minutes or whatever. The other thing we need in here, actually, though, is the authentication scheme. And this is really just a way to name the authentication middleware. You can end up with multiple authentication middlewares, and so you need a way to say, I want to use this one versus that one. So they're all going to need these names. The other nice setting this has is a property called login path. And this basically says, hey, when the response leaving the web server is 401, this is the path to send the user to so they can, in fact, log in, which makes sense. So that's my account/login page. Another new thing here in ASP.NET Core is that we also have what's called the access denied path. This is actually a new feature in ASP.NET Core, which basically says, hey, when the user comes in and they hit something that they're not allowed to get to, so the challenge result I showed you a minute ago, what if they're already logged in and we get a challenge? What should you do? Well, what happened in the old world? You guys remember? If you were already logged in and then the server said, no, you shouldn't be in here, you're not allowed, it redirected you back to the login page. And so if you didn't do anything special, the user would be like, wait, I thought I was logged in. And they try again, and they go back, and they go back to the login page, right? It's kind of getting into this, you know, so you're not telling the user why. And so now they added this concept of where if the user is already logged in, we will send them then to this forbidden page. The other thing is, because we can have multiple middlewares in our pipeline, you might not want them all to run always, because they could potentially step on each other's toes, as it were. So this is also a new feature here, is we have this concept of automatic authenticate and automatic challenge. And my understanding is that, if I recall correctly, these are off by default or false. So if you actually want the cookie to be read on the way in, you have to enable that with this automatic authenticate. And when on the way out, when we get one of the error status codes, if you want the login or the forbidden page to be shown, you have to trigger it on the way out by doing the automatic challenge. So now if I run this guy, and we click secure, notice we get redirected. We're now on the login page. I'm sure you guys have all seen this before, you know, for the last 10 years with ASP.NET. It's just that the plumbing's different under the covers. So a couple things, I'm now on the secure page, which is nice. I also get my return URL, so it actually keeps track of the URL that you tried to go to, so that once you're done with the login process, you can return them back. So the way we do that then is I can go over to my account controller, right? We have my login code here. The user's gonna submit a username and password, and then I do my, you know, lookup in a database. And obviously, I don't have a database for my demo, so this is my hacky, you know, password checking scheme. You could use ASP.NET Identity, right, to do your database lookup or whatever database you have for credentials. So it's in here then, once we've established the identity, we know who the user is, we need to get them logged in, and we do that with claims. So we're going to load up from our database, based on who the user is, a bunch of claims. And the claims are key value pairs, if you haven't seen them before, to represent information about the user. Claim can be anything, okay? It can be their name, it can be their first name, last name, email, their role, their age, whatever you want it to be. That's why claims are nice and flexible. A really important claim is this one called sub. Sub is sort of the canonical claim which represents the user's unique ID. That's a very important thing to know in your system, not just their display name, but their actual, kind of like their primary key, if you will, in your system. So that's an important one. You can make this anything you want, but that's the common one, if you will. So a name might be their display name. They may have an email, you know, @foo.com, whatever. Oops. And of course, roles are quite handy as well. And we can do multiple claims of the same type, for example. So now that I have this, I'm going to create what's called a claims identity around the claims. And the second parameter here to the claims identity is how the user authenticated. I'm going to take this claims identity and basically then send it into the cookie middleware and say, yeah, I want them to now be logged in with this identity. So this is the HTTP context, the authentication, and there's a sign-in method. And when you do this, because we can have multiple middlewares, we have to say which one we're trying to use here. So we say cookies. And we create a claims principle on top of the claims identity. That should now log them in. And we'll redirect back to the, I think I have it here. Remember the return URL we talked about? We have that. Now, should I redirect to any URL that happens to be passed in here? It's a little dangerous, right? Because somebody could be mucking with that return URL and fool the user into coming to my system and logging in, but putting a bad guy URL there. And if we just blindly redirected back over to some attacker's website, the user might think that they're really in your real app and start entering credit card information or whatever else. So that's actually a very dangerous thing to do. So we only want to redirect to the URL if it's local to our application. And so there used to be helpers to do this. There's actually now a new local redirect action result for just doing that. It throws an exception if that fails, or if it's not local, rather. Okay, good. So let's run this. Go back to my secure page. I log in with, Brock and Brock. And here we are. We're on my secure page. So I'm now got in. And the thing I want to show you about the secure page now is that on the secure page, we are in fact logged in, and we're logged in using, of course, the cookie, and the claims are rehydrated from the cookie and made available to your user object. So actually, let me go back to the code I just had there. So here in my view, I just have the user.claims. So you can either grab the user in the view, or you can even do it in your controller, and you have all the claims for that user. Questions about this? If you've been doing cookie-based authentication, claims, then this is very, very similar. If you've only been living in the web forms world, then this is very different. Okay, so of course I want to do a sign out now. So signing out, pretty straightforward. We're going to do await, HTTP context, dot authentication, and we call sign out async. And same thing, we say which middleware we need to sign them out of. So in this case, this will be the cookie middleware. So I think I still have my cookie. I do. And in fact, we can even hit F12 if you're curious. There's my cookie right there. Right? I didn't give it a custom name, so it just uses ASP.NET.cookies. That's the scheme that I configured it as, the name in the config file. And of course, if we log out, we no longer have our cookie. I guess I should have left that up there. But yeah, it's gone now. Okay, questions about that? No, all right. Oh, here's another a new feature that is brand new. This is not something that was provided, at least even in Katana, is that they have the concept of claims transformation. So there's middleware that can do what's called claims transformation. The idea here is that the cookie has all those claims that I issued on the login page, they are serialized into the cookie. And so every time we come back in, the cookie's then rehydrated into my claims principle, back and forth, back and forth. You may want more information about the user that changes frequently. And so if you put it into the cookie, then that's like a snapshot of the value. And so if you ever updated the value like in your database, you'd have to reissue the cookie to then get the updated value. Or if for some reason you need to really track a lot of data for the user, you don't want to make the cookie huge, right? So keep that thing small. But what you can do is on every request into your pipeline, the identity that you've established from the cookie, you can use that to look up in your database or in a cache additional claims for the user and then make those available for the remainder of the request. And this is something that will get called on every single request. So there's a use claims transformation. They hand you in the user, and your job is to return from result that user. And this allows you then, user.identities.first.addClaim. Oh, yes. Okay. Okay, so I'm just going to put a dummy claim in here that prints out the time. And so the idea here now is that every request coming in okay, if you look and hit down, so here, this is there. The top, I don't know, four or five claims are in the cookie. This one got added just for that one request. So if I hit refresh and refresh, you see that the time is in fact changing. Okay? So it's a very common pattern. Some of the stuff goes in the cookie. Other stuff that you might need in your app, you load on every request. Okay? All right. Questions about that? Nope. That's a nice new thing. It's a technique that we've been using for a long time. It's just they now have formal middleware for it. Okay, so the next thing, of course, is now that you have a local login, your marketing department says, hey, let them log in with Google. So we all need to support Google and Facebook and all those things. So, fortunately, that's easy to do. Microsoft has several external authentication middlewares. So there's a bunch for social, and like I said, there are others for more enterprise scenarios. So we can do Google here. That's a pretty easy one to set up. So I'll go grab project.json. I'll go grab Microsoft ASP.NET, totally not what I wanted. ASP.NET, authentication, you know, Google, for example. I was hoping my IntelliSense would work. It always takes a while. Yeah, I'm too impatient. Of course, that might totally be wrong, though. So let's see if my references work here. Restoring. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. The question was, I'm putting information into this cookie. Are they protected in any way? And so the answer is yes. They encrypt the value. So they serialize out the claims. That is then encrypted, and then they sign it. The signing is the more important one because it prevents tampering. So if the end user themselves try to change anything, it will fail to validate on the server. So if the user messes with it, no go, okay? Somebody running a packet scanner on the network, though, could intercept it and replay it, okay? So what's really the important thing here to prevent that I didn't mention? Yeah, SSL, HTTPS. So anything you do these days on the web should be HTTPS. Okay, and I totally forgot what I was gonna do here. Oh, Google. Yes, so we have Google. I will now go into my startup file, and I now want to app.use Google authentication. So with Google, what's gonna happen is, Google supports a security protocol, but the login page is on Google servers. So the user has to come to my app has to say go to Google, we get redirected over to Google. Once I'm on Google, I do all my logins over there, Google sends over to my application the outcome of the authentication. This middleware is doing all that protocol work for me. Once that protocol work is done, they then need to keep me logged in into the app. So Google's middleware will issue a cookie. Which cookie? The one above it. So when I'm configuring the Google middleware or anything, Facebook or any of these guys, so I'll give this a name, Google, like I did the other ones, not Google. Okay. All right, you guys come up here and type on this on stage. I just lost my train of thought now. Sign in scheme that. That's what I want. So the string I'm using here has to match the name of the other middleware. So when Google's all done with everything, issue that cookie. And that cookie is configured by the cookie middleware above it. And then also when I'm logging into Google, there's some security junk that needs to be put in here. So I fortunately have those pre-configured, so I'll just pop them in here. Oh, yes, thank you, I got those, you're right, I have those wrong. Authentication scheme is Google, the sign-in scheme is cookies, thanks. All right, so then, over on my login page, I can then set up a little link to say, yep, use Google, Oh, that's not what I want. Undo, there we go. Good, that means I'm gonna have a new action method on my account controller called Google. So I'll copy this guy. I had did a workshop on Monday, and I told the people who came then, I just got this Mac like a week ago, so I'm just kinda still a little uncomfortable with it. I'm not sure if I am happy with my decision yet, but. Okay, so when you come here, what I wanna do is sign you in with Google. So, remember the name of the method? Sign in, not so much. Sign in takes the claims as a parameter, okay? I wanna send them somewhere else, and that's what challenge is, yeah. So challenge async, Google. There's actually then, and by the way, challenge is go somewhere else, right? And then that's this redirect is kind of a funny thing in here. So this is actually, instead of calling that, there's the challenge result. Okay, so sign in with Google, for example. Now there's one problem here, which is when the Google authentication middleware will redirect me off to Google, and once it's done with everything and we come back and it issues the cookie, it's gotta take me somewhere else in my web app. It's kinda like the return URL from the local logins. And so by default, what it does is it takes you back to wherever you left from. So I'm leaving from this method. Once I go out and do all the authentication and come back, it's gonna bring me back to this method again, which is gonna immediately trigger me back to Google. You'll end up with a, you know, infinite redirect here. So there's something called an authentication properties with the return URL, /secure. So I'll pass the props as an additional parameter. Okay, and I think that's it. So we'll run this. We go to secure. I can now click the Google link. I'm already logged into Google, so we don't need to go through that process. But what Google does is, hey, this random third-party app wants some information about you. Are you okay with that? Since Google is third-party to the app, this makes sense to involve the user. I click allow. And look at that, we're back. It's pretty easy to set up an external provider. Okay, observations? The return URL? It was in Katana. I think it's like the default return URL, something like that. We'd have to take a look. Callback path is actually the internal part of the internal back and forth. I thought I saw one. Maybe not. Come up after, we'll double check. We'll take a look. Spend a little bit more time looking at it. So. All right. Good. Other questions? Observations? Yeah. Yeah, we'll get there in a minute. Yeah. So the thing here, the funny thing is the claim types, those are the old WS star claim types that Microsoft thinks are still like nice to use. They're all long and ugly and they have dates in them and that makes you feel like you're coding in 2005. So unfortunately these are just hard coded, you kind of have to deal with them. I'm gonna show you actually in a minute how to fix that. But we got all of our claims from Google. What else? Oh, what's the other observation about this? Who can log into your app now? Anybody from Google. That may or may not be what you want. So typically what you do is you don't just allow all of Google's logins to come in and use your trusted cookie. So in essence, what we're doing here is we are saying, yeah, Google, once anybody from Google comes in, give them this really highly trusted cookie to prove their identity in my app. And that's actually, like I said, you probably don't want that. What you probably want to do is when the user shows up from Google, you want to find out if you already have information about that user. Do you actually have your own account for the user? Are they registered? Maybe you want them to register. Maybe they haven't paid their bill, so you don't want to allow them in. I mean, you could have, you know, you're probably going to have custom logic around that work. So the technique for doing this is, you actually issue a temporary cookie. And so you change Google to now issuing a temp cookie. And the temp cookie now is not automatically trusted in my app because I said automate authenticate to false. And what this means now is that Google will issue this temp cookie, but now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take them to some special part of my app where I can check to see if they're in my database and do the registration if I need to, and whatever your logic may be around that. So what I'm going to do is change my app slightly here to take them to a register method instead. Okay? So the register method now, I now need to check for the temp cookie that the Google middleware issued. And so the way we do that is we go to the HTTP context, we go to the authentication manager, and now there's a method called authenticate async. And this is basically saying, go check for the claims in the temp cookie. And this is the difference here, is that this one I know I didn't set up as automatic. I have to explicitly go say, go read the temp cookie. So in essence, that's what that's doing. And then if this comes back, then you are going to basically, and by the way, this user has the claims. So these are the claims that Google issued for the user. The claim that I probably care the most about is this one right here. This is the unique ID that Google issued for the user, and that's going to always be the same for that user no matter what. If they change their name or email, that'll be the same. So I use that as like my foreign key lookup into my database of my users. So you're taking a Google user and you're mapping it to your user. This ID then is what you look them up, and if they're not in your database, right? So you're gonna, you know, look in the database. If not, you know, in the database, you're gonna show a registration UI of some sort. You know? And the thing about the registration UI is that you have all the claims from Google, so you can like pre-populate the registration UI with their first name and last name, but maybe they still want to change them. It's, you know, up to you and your app and maybe even the user. If they are in the database, then just log them in. You know? And so I'm not gonna bother with a registration UI because we don't have all the time in the world. But what I will do is basically snag the similar code to what I had before. And I'll pop this in here in my register. So imagine I found them in my database, right? I don't want my app to track them based on their Google ID. I want my app to track them based on my ID for the user. And then just to show you this and does in fact work, I'll grab like the email from the Google claims. Okay, so user.findFirst, claim types. Claim types is the constant from Microsoft with that big, long, you know, XML namespace thing in it. Okay. And then we'll log them in with the primary cookie. And I will redirect them back to, you know, home/secure. So then I will issue my primary trusted cookie once I've done my little logic to make sure that they're, you know, really allowed into my app. I need to do one more thing, too. What else do I need to do? Sorry? Yeah, get rid of this temp cookie that we had. So we'll do await HTTP context.authentication.signout from temp. And just to make sure my, so my Google login is now doing register. Okay. Good. Log out. Log back in. Pick Google. And if I didn't screw anything in, what did my register do? Oh, thank you very much. Okay, one more time. Secure, log in with Google. There we go. Good. And so now my email is my Gmail because I'm now really picking that up from Google's login. What do you guys think? Very similar if you've done Katana. So really, there's not a lot of delta there from the world of Katana, but from system.web and the old web forms world, very different programming model. Other questions? OK. Yes, sir. So So a couple things. One, you could just put fewer claims in the cookie. So you just put the one unique ID claim, subject ID, and then you're done. And then you could do claims transformation on every request to pull out anything that you, else that you might need. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. The other thing is that if you really decided you want to put a lot of claims in the cookie, which again, it's not highly recommended, you know, put as few as you can. For some reason, if it's too big, then they have the notion of a session cookie, where what they do is that they automatically will only put the subject claim, and then you have to have some server-side storage, which when they come back in, you look up the server-side storage. It's actually not too different than claims transformation from a custom database. Okay, so I showed you the social login stuff. There are other social providers built in, but those are the only four from Microsoft are Google, Facebook, Microsoft accounts, and Twitter. But all of these different providers, they're actually using OAuth. They're abusing OAuth to do authentication. As we all know, OAuth is not for authentication. But what they're doing is they're on top of OAuth adding some special sauce to really make OAuth secure for authentication, but they all do it differently. They all do different parameter names, and they do conventions different. And so that's why we have to have four different middlewares, because none of them are interoperable. But about 90% of the work is the same across them. So Microsoft actually introduced a base class for doing OAuth-style logins, even though OAuth's not for authentication. And they do that 90%. And then you can just derive from them and add that 10% for whatever other provider, like LinkedIn or whatever. Hopefully you won't have to do that because there's a contrib project that has done this for you already. So the contrib project derives from this new base class middleware. And like I said, they add that extra 10% for, you know, the variety of providers you see up here up on the screen. I think Battle.net is probably the most important one, right? So you can log in with your Warcraft account. But anyway, you get the idea. So that's a contrib project. Yeah. So you are proving that the slides are in the right order. So thank you for that. I appreciate that. So the things I've shown you are really just the building blocks, right? They're really kind of the low-level pieces. And you can use them within your app. That'd be fine. But the minute you start building more than one app, you're duplicating effort. Right, the account linking and all that stuff we talked about, and even registration and email verification and all of that, you're duplicating that code. So the proper architecture, so up on the screen is a picture of the kinds of apps that we are building. And the proper architecture, of course, is the minute you start to have, you know, duplicated effort, you want to factor that stuff out into something that you can use, reuse, rather. And so that is the concept of introducing a special application in your architecture called the token service. And the token service is what does all of that work. It logs the user in, it has your account registration, your account mapping from Google, everything else related to identity. And instead of doing that in every one of your apps, you factor this out into a separate application. Now, from your app, how do you kind of talk to that thing to know what the authentication outcome was? Well, it's actually very similar to like the Google stuff. There's a protocol for that. And in fact, there are protocols for doing the authentication, and that protocol is called OpenID Connect. And on top of that, within your application, once the user has logged into your app, you might want to call a web API, and you need that to be done securely as well. And the protocol for that is OAuth. So these are the modern security protocols for actually achieving this architecture. If, you know, Microsoft, you know, with this brand new ASP.NET Core framework they're building, of course they want to be poised to help us build these modern applications that we're doing. So as you might imagine, they have middleware to help us with these protocols. So they have a authentication middleware called OpenID Connect. And so that is just something you would put into your app. Instead of, for example, using the Google authentication middleware, you would use this within your app. Your app just trusts the token service now. And in fact, all of your apps trust the token service. It simplifies each one of your apps so that it's kind of out of the business of doing authentication. You put that work into the one place. So what you do is you set up, you know, OpenID Connect, you same thing, you say that you're gonna, once they get to your app, they're gonna use cookies. You have to put some metadata about where to go. So instead of the login path, we put the authority. Authority is just the fancy word for the thing we trust. And so the authority is logically almost like the URL to take the user to when they need to log on. And then there's this additional thing called scopes, which allow you to say what you want back from that guy. For your web APIs, there's middleware then to validate a very popular token format called a JOT, a JSON Web Token. So what your application gets back then will be a JSON Web Token that it can send to these web APIs. And the JSON Web Token then can be validated by this OAuth bearer token authentication middleware. It cracks open the JOT and validates it against the same authority concept that the prior one had. So Microsoft has positioned your web apps and your web APIs with middleware to trust these external mechanisms for authentication. So that's the consumer side. The thing that you need to think about next is who is going to produce these tokens? And so that token service is something that you will need. You want to use your own token service, by the way. Your APIs are not going to be protected by Google's token service, for example. You need your own token service. So in Katana, Microsoft had an OAuth 2 server middleware, but they have since deprecated it. Turns out it's a lot of work. And their implementation that they provided didn't do the hard stuff. They did some of the simple stuff, and then they sort of expected your applications to actually pick up the slack and do all the hard stuff. That is not trivial to do. So Microsoft has deprecated their OAuth 2 authorization server middleware that they had in Katana. And instead, they are recommending this project called Identity Server, which I'm involved with. So Identity Server is an open source token service, and it implements OpenID Connect and OAuth 2. And in fact, we have actually a couple versions. One version that's Katana-based, and that's actually been in use for a while now. It's, in April? So it's been out for almost a year and a half. But we are working also on a new version called Identity Server 4, which is ASP.NET Core-based. And really what that means is that it is .NET Core-based, and therefore it can be cross-platform. So you could set this up on your Linux, Docker container. So we are still working on it. It is a work in progress. But I have a little bit to show you here. So in January of this year, we sort of announced this, and it is very much in preview mode. So we're certainly nowhere near releasing. I think our big thing is we're waiting on release candidate 2 from Microsoft. But the idea is that you host this then as a piece of middleware. So you're going to write an ASP.NET Core application. We have our configure method that we talked about before, and in here then is use Identity Server, just middleware. You do have to configure Identity Server, so that's actually done in the new DI system in ASP.NET Core. So under Configure Services is where you register all the dependencies that you have or need for your application, and then those will be made available to the app. And so Identity Server has follows the same pattern as MVC or anything else in this new world. And you set up your configuration here, and you configure it with, in this case, some of the minimal amount of information. Who are your users? What are your scopes? Those are the things you're protecting, right? Your web APIs and things like that. And then, of course, your clients are the applications. For demo purposes, we just have an in-memory implementation, but of course you can plug in like a real database of all your users and things like that. With Identity Server, it's still your users. Identity Server is just doing the protocol work for you. So I can run this just to get it up and running. Okay. So I think Javier earlier today showed Identity Server version 3. So this is now Identity Server 4 running on ASP.NET Core. Then, of course, I have my applications here. So we have lots of samples that show using it. So we have various samples over on the right showing using it from like a console application, maybe just a server-to-server communication. But the MVC one is the important one in the context of this talk. So this is a application now that is going to be using the token service for authentication. And if you go into his configuration, this should look, again, very similar to what we saw just a few minutes ago. We are using cookies to track the user. And then instead of doing like app.useGoogleAuthentication, we're now doing useOpenIDConnectAuthentication. And the URL here is just the URL over to the identity server I just ran a minute ago. So follows the same pattern, very much like everything else. So now when I do the secure page, right, we get redirected over to identity server. This is all for you to customize then. You can have whatever your login page branded however you want. Look up in your database. And I have Bob and Bob. We have the typical consent screen. Again, this is an optional consent screen. If everything's within the same trust boundary, then you don't need this. But it's sort of like Google, right? When Google was going to issue something over to a third party, you do want the user to be involved. So this is something you can enable or disable. And then what happens is we say yes, and we send information, a token, back over to the application. So here's the application. I got the claims back from identity server now. And if we go find the important one here, the subject claim, that is the user's unique ID. So now this is the tracking ID for the user. So the user now goes to your second app or your third app or your fourth app. They're going to get single sign-on, and it's going to give you back that same unique ID for the user. And so now across all your apps, you have a nice, consistent identifier for the user that will never change. And that is what you then track in each of your local apps whenever the user does stuff. Additionally, the other thing that we got back from the token service was an access token. And the access token is the thing that we then call the web API with. The access token, again, it represents the user, and this is what we can then send to a web API to do authentication. So this access token is something called a JSON web token. If we look over here in my sample, I have a sample web API. My sample web API is a separate project hosting, you know, ASP.NET Core. I'm using in, you know, pulling in MVC, but I'm not doing any UI. I'm just doing web APIs. And then over here, I'm doing middleware to validate the incoming token. So if I run this guy, I think this with nothing, we should still get the normal 401. Yep, 401. But over here in my MVC application, then what happens is when I call the web API, right, we pass the token along, and I guess I should have shown you this too, sorry. The actual controller is getting the claims from the caller, which is coming from that token. So the token is passed from the MVC app to the web API. The token has all the information about the user. The Jot middleware is turning that into claims, and the claims are now made available to the MVC app here, and we're just echoing them back to the caller just to prove that the claims, you know, were read from the token. So again, we have things like the subject claim, so you know who the unique, you know, the unique ID of the user. And you can pack whatever claims you want in there, email, roles, of course, if you're doing authorization, things like that. So the thing about identity server here is that this is a full implementation of the OpenID Connect protocol. It is a certified implementation. The OpenID Connect committee, they have a certification process where you run your thing through, you know, all the certification process, and so we are certified. And because Microsoft had deprecated their OAuth 2 authorization server middleware, they are now officially recommending Identity Server as the replacement in your ASP.NET Core applications. Okay? Question? So correct. So the comment or the question is the MVC app, which is your app, sends the user over to the other MVC app, which then does the authentication. But that, because it's hosting the token service, then issues a token back to your app. And the token is what establishes the proof of identity. And then your application doesn't have to do password resets or take credentials. And then, yes, the minute you have more than one app, they're all just going to get the benefit of single sign-on because the user's already logged in once, and they have a cookie with the token service. Exactly. Other questions or comments? Yes? So the API was done from the server side. And I know you had previously asked about client side, but it would just be pretty easy to take this the one step further. And yeah, I'll show you. You'll probably, it might take a little bit longer, so you have to come up afterwards and I can show it to you, but it's where did my code go? Here is then my, sorry, this is the wrong project. So the user has claims on line 26 or 7, right? You just grab the access token out of the claims. Again, this is server side, so this is in the MVC app, right? That token is just a string. So when you call your web API, right, we're going to use the HTTP client. That's the thing to do, you know, HTTP calls. This will set the token as the authorization header on the web API calls. And then we simply call, you know, an HTTP get to some, you know, whatever that URL is. And the token is then sent. Over in the web API, the middleware in front of the web API is then looking for the authorization header for the bearer token, getting the JOT and validating it. Okay? I know you want to do JavaScript, so I don't have that. Yeah, so it's going back to my server, and my server was doing it. If I wanted this from my JavaScript, then all you would do is, where did I go here? Oh, sorry, it's actually down here. If I wanted to do this for my JavaScript, you have the access token server side, just render it out to your HTML page and have your JavaScript and your HTML page go grab the same string and send it when it makes its XML HTTP request. Okay. Yes, these are all up on GitHub, right? So with the link that's here, right, they're all available. And again, we have Identity Server 3 and Identity Server 4. So if you're not ready to go to ASP.NET Core, you can stay with Identity Server 3, and mechanically, you know, the core code is about 80% the same between the two. That particular example, I actually don't even remember which one we're using. I'd have to go look at it. It was either implicit or as hybrid, one of the two for the MVC app. You pick the flow depending on your context. So some scenarios, implicit makes more sense than hybrids. Other scenarios, hybrid's more appropriate. Every scenario has its inputs to help you identify that. Okay, sure, absolutely. Okay, last two things. I know we're running out of time here. The last two things, these are short, is that I wanted to talk. Ooh, I'm out of time. So remember machine key? Machine key was a real problem because it expected the developer to create security keys and manage them. Key management is a horrible, you know, a very, very hard problem. So what happened was people would use this machine key element. They would check it into the source code. It would be pushed up to GitHub. It was available for everyone to see. And the problem here is that the machine key was controlling things like the protection on your cookies. Somebody had asked about protecting the cookies, and you know, that's the same kind of concept. The problem here, though, is, of course, then key rotation also. Key rotation's a good idea. Change those private keys every once in a while. So if you ever change this thing, everybody who is currently logged in now won't be able to log in anymore. The cookie's no longer good. This is all gone. There's a new data protection API in ASP.NET Core. They take away from you the ability to create these keys, and they do it all for you. To do so, though, they have to put them somewhere. So there's some defaults that happen by depending on your environment. In Azure, they will automatically store these out into this folder, as you can see up on the slide, and those are replicated across your Azure websites. If you're not running in Azure, then what happens is there's some default folders on your local machine, and again, they are, depending on the context, they're either protected or not protected with a DP API key. So there's some keys in the config file, and then those are then automatically encrypted with a secret that's only on that machine, depending on these different scenarios. The problem is, usually that only works for that machine, and you, at some point, need to do a web farm. Now, if you're doing it up in Azure, like I said, the magic happens. But if you're controlling that yourself, you basically need to do a manual configuration, and basically the way it works is that you set up in the DI system, you're configuring how data protection works, and you set a network share, and that's the storage that holds these keys, and then every one of your machines in your web farm can just read and write to that shared store. The thing is, though, you still want these things to be encrypted on disk. If you don't do anything else, then they're going to be in plain text. So again, at least they're not in your directory. That's a huge improvement. So you could then further protect them with a certificate. So then all you need to do is all the machines on your web farm, make sure you synchronize the certificate. Logically, it's kind of like synchronizing the machine key, but it's much better than being in your app itself. Okay, so that's one thing. And again, I know I'm over, so bear with me for 5 more minutes, please. The last thing is the authorization system. The authorization system has been revamped based on lots of feedback about authorization being done in kind of a brittle way. So the authorize attribute, like I said, is still there. The allow anonymous is also still there. So it tends to be nice to put authorize by default and then relax security where you need to. Role-based authorization is still supported. But this has been, for many, many years, we've been recommending staying away from the inline role-based authorization. Reason being, your authorization logic changes from time to time. And so if your logic changes about who can hit that API, then you become a master in search and replace, right? And so you're going to have to go update all your code, and it just becomes a whole, you know, new QA process and rollout process to push out your updates. And, you know, since it's search and replace or just strings, did you get it right? So the recommendation we've been talking about for a while is to take the authorization and decouple it from your application. And they have done this now in ASP.NET Core. They have this new thing called authorization policies. And the idea is that you no longer embed your logic with your business logic, your authorization logic with your business logic, you separate it out. And they have this thing called a policy where you basically say, hey, I'm going to create a policy called senior sales or sales senior. And what this means is that the user has to be authenticated, they need to be in the sales department, and they need to be in the status of senior. And again, this is all claims-based based on the user. Down below on the far right, then, you'll see the authorize attribute now has the ability to say which policy you want to use. And so the policy here, basically, is a level of indirection to the chunk of logic that you've put somewhere else. The chunk of logic being separate, what's nice about that then is that you only have to update the authorization stuff in one place, and then you don't have to recompile all the other stuff, right? As long as it's like a different assembly, you just pop in the new authorization assembly. Also, the nice thing about this is there is a way from your UI to ask the authorization system to say, hey, is the current user, do they satisfy this policy? And in the UI, you can hide and show, you know, the button that would do whatever is going to go on. And again, you're not duplicating the logic because we now have this level of indirection. So I think this is a really nice, a nice thing. So this is called policy-based authorization. So this is the first good thing about the new authorization system, or one of them. So this is all about the user. You can take this a step further and get a little bit more sophisticated and do what's called resource-based authorization. So instead of just the user being an input into the logic, you also take into account what the user's trying to do and the resource that they're trying to do it to. So if I am trying to delete a document, you might have logic that says only the owner of the document can delete it. So you're now taking into consideration not just information about the user, but the specific document that they're doing, the specific resource, and what it is they're trying to do. Okay? Of course, it's a little bit more sophisticated. There's a little bit more complexity. But the idea is that you create these things called handlers, right? An authorization handler. And notice the generic arguments is actual document. So this actually takes the document into consideration. And then in this handle method, you get passed the context, which is the user, the operation, which is delete or update or whatever you want to make it, and then you actually get the document itself. And you basically say yay or nay. And then you plug this into DI. Triggering this, then, is from your code. And this is now always done imperatively because you need the resource to be involved. So there's no declarative version of this, right? You have to have, like, loaded the resource. So there's you just use the dependency injection system, you inject the iAuthorization service, and then down in your, you know, logic, when you're about to do the logic of whatever it means, you first check to see if the user is allowed for this particular resource. Okay? So that's a nice decoupling between, you know, the logic of your business and the authorization. And by the way, these handlers, the benefit here is that these are in the DI system. So these themselves could take dependencies on like your database system or some web service that might be your permissions system somewhere else. So not only can your code be all just in-memory logic, but you could then ask some other system or look up in the database the additional information you need to answer the authorization question. So this is a really nice thing that they've added to ASP.NET Core. It's far better than what we had before. Okay, I know I'm at the end. So here's the list of resources. Thank you for coming. I'll sit up here and answer any questions if you have anything else to talk to me about. So thank you very much.